Hello, and welcome to Beating Around the Bush with Fleur Anderson, a chance to sit back, relax, and chat about business, culture, community, and technology in rural Australia. Beating Around the Bush is brought to you by the Rural Business Collective.
Bronwyn Reid has successfully started and runs three small businesses from Emerald in central Queensland. She not just runs them, she runs them well. They are award-winning, and one of those businesses is 20 years old this year. So you can imagine Bronwyn's seen a lot of ups and downs over the years with her business there, and it's a great opportunity to touch base and have a chat. Hi, Bronwyn.
Hi, Fleur. Nice to talk to you.
You too. Now, where do we start? 20 years. That's a bit of a feat in this modern day and age. Tell us about where that started.
Okay, 20 years ago, my husband and business partner, Ian, and I were living overseas. We'd been wandering the planet for a few years, mostly with Ian's work in plantation agriculture. And then we had our first child and decided that we wanted our children to be brought up as little Aussies. Mm-hmm. So we made the change and came back to Australia. When we first came back, we had no jobs. Because we'd lived in company accommodation all those years, we didn't even have an ironing board or pegs or tea towels or anything. So we spent some time living on an irrigation farm that my parents owned. And from there, we set up 40 consultants. Originally, Ian was still consulting back into Southeast Asia on plantation agriculture. And then we started doing some contracts here with the federal and state government, again, in agribusiness, always around that best management practice stuff, Fleur. Yeah. You know, trying to make production possible with the least environmental impact. Then, of course, as the whole mining thing ramped up, we got mining contracts and oil and gas contracts, and then they all went away. So we still have some mining work, but we've never stopped being involved with agribusiness.
Yeah, exactly.
And we've also done a lot of work with industry and councils.
So I'd love to touch on that variety of clients later, but I'd like to start with the 4T consultants specialising in agriculture and environmental consulting and best practice there. That's still at the core of the business today.
100%, 100%. What drives our business is the desire to help our clients to obtain production from our natural resources, but with the least environmental impact that we can manage. I mean, we all know that we have to utilise our natural resources if we're going to live on Earth.
Yes.
But our job is to help our clients do that in the best possible way to minimise our impact, and so that we've got something to hand on to our children, of course.
And 20 years ago, what was that landscape like? Was that something today? I think everyone listening would nod their heads and agree that that is something that is critical in any agricultural business. 20 years ago, was that something that was still emerging as a trend here in Australia, and hence why a lot of the work in Southeast Asia?
Very insightful question, Fleur, and you're exactly right. 20 years ago, we were definitely a bit ahead of the curve, but we found some good supporters who came along the journey with us. Even the overseas stuff, a lot of the stuff that Ian was doing with his business partners in Southeast Asia was way ahead of the curve. And it's even now only just starting to become a real thing. So
when you are a bit ahead of the curve, and it's it's a big part of the business education, or, you know, because I think a lot of people start these businesses where they can see something that maybe other people can't yet, and therein lies a little bit of a trick in the sales probably don't just automatically flow through the door.
No, definitely not. And that's why we were very fortunate, Fleur, way back towards the beginning of 4T Consultants. We actually were successful in winning some very large government contracts, which federal money was flowing down through state government and then through industry. And part of those projects was to do exactly that, was to get on ground, get wet and dirty, and actually spend time with the people who are at the risk end of the production process. It's no use educating and dealing with things that are at policy level. Yes, we need policy, but you've got to get down to the people who are actually in charge of the the hazard situations, and that's what those first projects did.
Yeah, what an exciting time. A lot of you would have seen some great, you know, practice change and seen some wonderful things during that time.
Yeah, we definitely have. There's been some amazing breakthroughs, changes in practices, and as you alluded to before, a shift, a mind shift.
So that's comforting. So the mind shift, the mind shift, not the M-I-N-E shift, mind shift.
Yes.
When you realise, and you could say, yes, good, everyone under, like we're all talking the same language now. And then another shift came along, which was the mining industry. Tell us about when that started to enter into your psyche and when, and how you went as adapting a business for that industry.
Just before I go into that, I'll say that not everybody has made that mind shift.
That's true.
Particularly with the overseas stuff. Yeah, there's still quite a long way to go.
Yeah.
But moving forward with the M-I-N-E shift, initially our work there started because we were asked by some landholders to monitor their groundwater because they were in an area that where mines were being developed. So, and of course, we'd dealt with them before. They trusted our work. We had a good relationship. So that was actually our first mine contract, was doing groundwater monitoring for landholders. Then that one little contract turned into some on-site work and then some more on-site work and then some more on-site work to the point where one particular client was over 60% of our revenue. And that was like, oh, not good.
Yeah.
So then we started to try get into the oil and gas industry so we could spread our risk a bit. And then not too long after that, one of the oil and gas clients became 60% of our revenue. So during that time when the resources industry was really ramping up, it was extremely difficult to get that good spread of client. It was really, really hard. But by measuring it, at least we knew where the danger was.
Yeah, that's right. At least you were aware of it. And so
yeah.
What did you do? I mean, it is incredibly difficult. You mentioned that. What sort of things do you put in place to sort of safeguard you against the risk of having all of your eggs in one basket?
First thing, you can turn down work, but that's not the ideal situation. What the approach that we took, Fleur, was to, as I said, just be really mindful of the risks that we had. Quite frankly, keeping the cash flow position where if one of those big customers did disappear overnight, and we know very well that they can, that we wouldn't have been in a mortally wounded position.
I mean, the good part of it about this position is that you have now, at this point in your business, you had your fingers in different pies, which is a risk spreading in itself. So at least you were across some different industries. As one rises up, does the other one go down? Did you see the decline of a lot of the ag work at that time?
Yes and no. I mean, obviously ag always has its ups and downs with droughts and commodity prices going around the place. So yes, there were times when both resources and ag and even industry were a little bit subdued. The biggest thing that happened though, Fleur, was when the mining or the resources boom really took off, it really didn't matter what was happening in ag because that boom just took over all the regional economies.
Yeah.
Anyone who was centered around resources. So it really didn't matter what ag was doing. This other thing came along and just swept all in front of it.
And we are talking about mining, and we are, for context for listeners, in central Queensland, in Emerald. Other towns and communities will see their booms and as well in different times. What year are we talking? Where are we, Bron, on the time frame here? What year did you start seeing all that work lift up?
2008 was when it really started to ramp up. And then sort of 2010, 2011, it was nuts.
Yeah.
Completely nuts. And then, of course, the tap was turned off just
overnight.
We actually had six large contracts that we had already resourced. We had purchase orders for them. Mm-hmm. And it was just week after week we just got a phone call saying, sorry, project's not going ahead.
Wow.
So that's pretty confronting when you trying to deal with that. So that was not a nice period.
No, as business owners, I mean, some of the biggest fears that you have is that when you start recruiting and taking on team members is that you're going to be able to, you know, cover their work and their wages and give them a secure job. That must have been something that was a very stressful period.
It was awful. In the end, we actually only put off the payroll one person, and that was possibly my worst day in 20 years in business.
Yeah.
It was just awful. A lot of the others, you know, left through natural attrition. We had actually lost a couple of employees because they literally had nowhere to live.
Yeah, wow.
There was no real estate to be had. Mm. So it was two really, really good team members we lost. They just had nowhere to live, so they had to go elsewhere.
Yeah, okay. So when for people that are in businesses that, whether it's mining or other, or they see an increase in their business and they've gone from themselves and perhaps their partner in a small consulting business, and then all of a sudden overnight there's this opportunity that they want to grab with both hands, as you guys would have, what changes did you need to make to your business? Looking back, what changes do you think, do you wish you had made sooner?
Probably would have started, you know, intensive marketing sooner, because 4T had always been in a position that it had sufficient business, or during the boom time, more than sufficient business. We never really ramped up our marketing very much, and that's in retrospect, that was probably a bit of an error that, you know, I didn't start really branding until possibly a little bit too late. The other thing is being really, really careful of cash flow. It's really, really easy to let the cash flow get out of control. Understanding that there's steps in the business, there's certain points at which your business will change. Once you get beyond about 4 employees, then you start to change. Then again, sort of 7, 8 employees. Then when you get to 12 employees and so on. So your business is actually becoming a different beast as it grows, and you must have that knowledge to allow your business to be restructured all the time as it grows, because you get these steps, you know, you get to 5 people and then you need another ute and then you need another desk and you need another computer whatever. So you have this sort of step growth. And unfortunately, what we see too often is that part is not managed well. So you get a whole lot of businesses stuck in that what one of my business mentors calls the struggle zone. And 70% of businesses never get out of there because they can't navigate that growth path correctly.
And is that a lot of timing, navigating that growth path, or even just acknowledging that that's where you're at?
At least acknowledging that's where you're at. I wish I had known that before I started my growth path. You know, I think we did it okay, but to realise that it's like when you go rock climbing or something, there's a big chasm there and you need to get ready your ropes and your support systems to jump over that chasm really quickly. Because if you don't, if you're not prepared, you'll be stuck there.
And when you say these changes that you're talking about and these step changes, is that in terms of, you know, what are some of the things, the obvious things, like, are they business processes or different business requirements to meet employee needs, or are the customers, or all of the above?
Definitely the big one is business systems. Fortunately, I started that really early. So we had a lot of that stuff documented and, you know, checklists and all that sort of stuff going back quite a long way. So that wasn't a real hurdle when we needed to ramp it up a bit for the mining industry, where, of course, we had to have safety systems and, you know, auditable safety systems and all that sort of stuff. So that's number one. You're never going to get into growth path unless you've got your system sorted. The other thing is, you know, you go through a part where, you know, we would have monthly meetings where we all sat around the table and it's a very open company, our company. But then we got to a point where we literally had to go to a management team.
Yeah.
And we would have a management meeting and then have a team meeting. So a lot of the management stuff was talked over in the management meeting without everyone else having to sit through it. Little changes like that.
And Bronwyn, around this time, while you, I mean, you've navigated some of these steps in 4T Consultant, and then is this the point where you've identified the struggle you guys have been through and what you're seeing in others? And is this where your latest venture or most recent one, Mining for Business, came from?
100%, honestly. So many things. I just had to learn myself and trial and error of, you know, software systems to use. What's the best one to use? You know, does this one connect with that one? How to answer a tender? You know, I'd never answered a tender from a mining company before. Nice. I didn't even understand half the words. They're all the things I had to teach myself. And yeah, it was hard work. So then I thought, you know, I had other people asking me to help them. So I thought, well, why don't I turn this into a business?
Absolutely. So how did that evolve? So what is Mining for Business, and what does it, how does it operate?
I'm actually undergoing a rebranding at the moment, Fleur. So the Mining for Business brand will be, because people still think I'm a mining company, and I'm not a mining company. I'm rebranding to pretty much a personal brand.
Great.
With the small company, big business tagline. And that's what I've called the program that I've developed to help small business owners. It's called the Small Company, Big Business Program. And that takes people through 5 steps of to get them to the point that it took me, I don't know, 5-6 years to do, making all my mistakes and wasting all my money, hopefully to get somebody through that in, you know, 6 or 8 months.
Okay, great. So small company, big business, that's great. That really clearly tells us exactly who you're talking to, and it's people like us that are wanting to, small businesses out there that are wanting to work with the big companies but need to understand the motivations of big companies. Is that a place to start? Why is there this disconnect? What's the difference between the small companies and the big companies that help them? We don't sort of understand each other very well.
You've just actually highlighted the very first part of the program, is you've got to understand how these things think. They are different. They think differently. They have different priorities. And once I started researching, I found that there was a lot of research about this interaction or this interface between big companies and small business, but it was all from the big companies' point of view. You know, there was academic research, there was papers, there was, you know, leaflets, there was all sorts of things. But it was all from the big company's point of view. There was very, very little to help the small business owner.
Right.
So that's where the Small Company Big Business Program came in. Because, you know, I had one business owner talk to me, and he said he was asked to do a job for a large insurance company. And I said, okay, well, you know, let's deconstruct this. What did they ask you? He said, I didn't even understand the words. I can't tell you what they wanted because I didn't understand what they were saying.
Yeah, it is a different language, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's where the Small Company Big Business Program came from. What I felt was a real gap for the small business owner to get themselves ready and be prepared to take on contracts, which, you know, let's face it, can provide a really good cash flow and stability for a business, but without having to waste all the time and money that I did getting ready.
So you say there's 5 steps in this program, Bronwyn, and the first, you know, step is talking about the differences or the differences in languages and understanding the two sides of the coin. What are the other 4 things that you touch on in your course?
Okay, we touched on the understanding bit, you know, how these people think. Then the next one is what I call set your foundations. Now, you can't, if you're going to build a house, a big house, you've got to have good foundations. Same with your business. You must have those good foundations in place before you start talking to, you know, Woolworths, Coles, Rio Tinto, anybody. And that's things like having your value proposition, having your business plan sorted out, having your why pointed out. Sorted out, all that sort of stuff. Have your, you know, a good relationship with your bank, good relationship with your insurance broker, all that sort of stuff. It's quite boring, but unless you do it, you're not going to go any further.
Yeah.
Then what I call simplify the complexity, which is putting in your business systems. That's the biggest part of the program. You must have those good, robust, documented systems. Then what I call make yourself known, which is about your digital presence, because let's face it, 8 out of 10 people now are going to search for you online. Yeah. If you're not online, you're nowhere.
Yeah.
And the last one is tell your story, which is how to write good tenders and proposals. Again, maybe boring, but it's a skill that you need if you're going to apply for council contracts. You need to be able to write tenders.
Yeah, absolutely. And so a lot of people would think that winning a contract with a local council or a Rio Tinto or Woolworths comes down to their big businesses. They make decisions based on price and on competitiveness and timeframes. But that's not all there is to it, is it? I mean, you said about telling your story. So does storytelling play a part in that business competition?
100%, 200%. And this is where a lot of small businesses are very reluctant to go down this path. But the analogy that I use is if you look up an accountant online and you'll find that they do tax and, you know, financial planning. Wow, who would have thought?
Yeah. Yeah.
And every single account website that you look at will say, yeah, we do, we're different, you know, we're better, but we do tax and financial planning. Wow. What is it about your accountancy firm that makes you stand out from, you know, maybe you, it's a regional basis, you know, you only operate in such an industry or you only operate in a certain area or something, whatever it may be. You know, I've told a bit of the story of 4T Consultants today. You know, it started when we were living overseas and we had a child and blah, 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 blah. All of that part, all of that is actually really important to weave into your company story and what you're trying to sell to your customers.
Yeah, so big companies are interested in that sort of human element. I guess that's something that people, well, I certainly probably underestimate.
It's very, I mean, you don't want to, you know, go as far as, you know, telling your great grandparents' story and how they came out in the boat from Ireland or something. But it's very much the personality of your business. And we have the advantage as small businesses, and you know this, Fleur, as well as I do, that as a small business, you actually do have a story.
Yeah.
You know, your story comes from your regional area, and it is very important to, and it's not easy, I'm not saying it's easy, but it's really important.
There's probably some things that we take for granted about our story too that's incredibly attractive to some of these big companies that we just take for granted as part of the way we do business.
One of the things that I always try to weave into our story, or when it's appropriate, with 4T Consultants is that we are a local firm.
Yeah.
We're a local firm. We're embedded in the community. We sponsor things. We, you know, help the schools, and all our employees are local. So they are also invested in the community. So as a company, we have a very long-term interest in making sure our community is sustainable. And that's part of our story.
Speaks to not just the social responsibility of the company and all the fluffy stuff, but I mean that also speaks to them knowing that they're getting a good quality local knowledge, all of a real on the boots on the ground kind of service as well.
Yeah, and if our company says they're going to do something, they do it. I saw a really good one on Facebook a little while ago, and it was for an electrical company that was here in Emerald, I think. And it just had this lovely little graphic on Facebook and said, did you know that so-and-so electrical was started blah, 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 blah in the kitchen over a table? And I thought, how good is that? Just a simple little graphic.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think, you know, I mean, that landscape, I mean, from what I've observed, and what do you think, Bob? That seems like that has really changed over the last 5 or 10 years. I remember when I first sort of started consulting, the idea was to get a PO box somewhere in the city and a fax number with a Brisbane number on it, so nobody knew that you were from a small, you know, that you were small. You were trying to act bigger than what you were. You know, I'm just sort of reflecting on that as we're talking. Seems like that's really been shifted on its head too, and that small local thing has become an advantage.
Absolutely. I mean, it depends on your industry and your services, of course, but turning that around, turning that story around into it being a positive advantage that's de rigueur at the moment. I mean, back to the 70s, you know, the 70s or even the early 80s, it was selling. You were selling. And part of what you were selling was the fact that you were bigger, so you had to have a, you know, a fax machine with a zero, with a, you know, the right number on it. So, but now it's not about that selling at all. It's about helping.
Yeah, it's about that service. And that's really where a lot of probably the listeners here that we've grown up in rural areas and have small businesses have really probably got a bit of a competitive advantage. Well, one thing that when people are going to and when they're starting these sorts of interactions with the larger companies, what are some of the tools that you have to have before you get going? Because listening to some of the things that you're talking about in this, simplifying the complexity, the systems and the in terms of information on your business, what are the quick and dirty couple of things that you need to do before you can even knock on a door?
One is what I call pay the admission price.
Yeah.
But even before that, you've got to have those foundations in there. If you, you know, I've actually, you know, had a small business owner say to me, you know, when I ask, you know, what's your business? Give me a pitch. Oh, we do anything for anybody. Right? Do you remember the goodies? You know, anything, anytime.
Yeah.
That's not going to cut it. You need to be very, very clear on what value you're supplying to your customer, not what product or service, but what value stroke solution you're supplying and who your ideal customer is. Who is it that's going to benefit from your value? Then the other quick and dirty, except it's not quick and dirty, is research. What is it? Pay the admission price. Yeah. Don't go into the company when you finally get an interview and sit down across the desk from your prospective buyer and say, so tell me about your company. You need to be researching, you know, use LinkedIn, use Google, you know, have they just had a company report out? Is there a trigger event? You know, has something happened in there? And that's another story of ours. During 4T's business, there was a particular trigger event. A large company did not know that we even existed. We knew that we could help them in that situation. Okay. So we made our pitch. It was a little bit, what's this little tiny company all about? But went on to become one of our biggest contracts ever because we took that trigger event and said, hey, you got a problem. We can help you out.
That's great.
There's no selling.
What company wouldn't love it if you walked through the door and said, hey, I know your problems and I know how to solve them? So that research is really important. I mean, there's nothing worse than, not knowing who you're talking to and feeling you're wasting their time. I mean, the five steps of this mining company are on, is that going to be, is that delivered online or in workshop form? Or how are you going to spread the good word to all those small businesses?
There's workshops. So there's a sort of, what do I call it, very little help. So that's online videos, downloads, et cetera. So somebody can take it away, read, watch, implement it themselves. Then there's a little bit of help, which is, Skype sessions, and some team sessions, and then there's do it for me, which is really, really hands-on, where I actually get into the business and start helping them write procedures and sort things out.
Fantastic. Great. So there's something there for everyone and regardless of where they're at. So you can, that very little help model, people listening can get a hold of that no matter where they live. They don't have to be up in central Queensland, but then they can get in touch with you for the little added on extra via Skype as well.
Yeah, and then even just doing the first one, that will help the small business owner realise what they don't know. Because a lot of people set out on this journey, not even, you know, what was his name? American vice president, the known knowns and the known unknowns, the unknown unknowns. So the unknown unknowns are the ones that kill you.
Absolutely. I remember just a little quick story. I'm going for a consulting gig with one of my first sort of larger companies, and they said, look, that all sounds great. I've got a meeting with my managers next, with my manager next week. Have you got a capability statement you can flick me and will, that I can take to the meeting? I said, absolutely. I will get that to you straight away. As soon as I get home, the first thing I did when I got home was Google what
The capability statement.
Downloaded a few companies' capability statements and tried to patch my own up. Pretty sure I didn't do it a lot of justice. Certainly looks a lot different today.
I've actually written a blog post about that, and that's actually been one of my more popular blog posts. You know, it just what triggered it. In a week, I had two people ring me up and say, "Hey, you know, yeah. I need a capability statement." One of them actually knew what it was but didn't have one. The second person was a bit like what it sounded with you years ago. I didn't even know what they wanted. I didn't even understand what they were asking for.
This is the thing about terminology, isn't it? I mean, when I did my research, I discovered that, you know, it was just, that story of my business, what are the services I provide, you know, almost like a flyer on steroids about what I can do and how our business operates. But it just wasn't language that I was used to using in my business.
No, that's right. And if you're preparing a capability statement for large companies, there are things in there that they expect to be there.
Yeah.
And if you don't know that, if you don't know what those things are, you're going to look less than impressive to your prospective client.
Yeah, absolutely. Bronwyn, that's great. I mean, real wealth of knowledge that you're able to bring to these small businesses from all of the bumps and grazes and bruises you've had over 20 years in business.
I'm looking every bit of it.
Not at all. But, I mean, 20 years in business is a fantastic achievement. I think a lot of people, when they start out, hope that in 20 years they're still there, let alone still there and expanding. So that's a wonderful achievement. And how lucky we are that this small company, big business, is now going to help save us all a bit of time, hack a bit of time off and shortcut, really, is what we're
doing. Well, I hope so, Fleur. That's my hope with it, is to fast track that learning curve for other small business owners.
Excellent. And so where can we find it, Bronwyn? Where can people get in touch with you?
Mostly through the website, which is www.miningforbusiness.com.au.
Great.
I will be launching a new website shortly, but this address will be redirected to the new one.
Excellent. And we'll put that information in the show notes of this show and on our website, and we'll keep everyone updated when you have your rebrand as well, which I'm looking forward to seeing. And I believe there's something else we should be keeping our eyes out for too. You're going to add business person, entrepreneur and author to the list of things that you can do.
Yes, I'm going to be able to say author. Well, I haven't. I've written a book about the Small Company Big Business Program, the 5 steps. In fact, I've expanded it to 7, chucked a few little, you know, additional extras in there. It's at the editor as we speak. So I'm waiting with bated breath to get my first, it's like, you know, waiting for your assignment to come back from uni, you know, just, am I going to fail? Is it going to be red marks all over it?
Oh, no, that's terribly exciting. Well, we'll have to catch up again when that's out. And I've got so many questions about even that whole process, about how you went about writing this book and navigating that. So congratulations. What a big year you're having.
Yes. It's been in the making for a couple of years, Fleur, so, but I'm glad I didn't do it earlier, because my thinking has clarified a lot over the time I've been writing it. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Wonderful. All right. Well, look, thanks so much for your time today, Bronwyn, with us on the show here, and we look forward to seeing what's ahead.
Thanks, Fleur. Yes, we look forward to the next 20 years now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for listening to Beating Around the Bush. If you've enjoyed the show, please head to iTunes to subscribe and leave a review. For more, visit the Rural Business Collective website at ruralbusinesscollective.com.au and join the growing tribe of small business owners and entrepreneurs making a difference in the bush.